Well, there was a big focus on Northern Ireland and the Good Friday Agreement, indeed, because it's 25 years on. There was a big conference on the Good Friday Agreement in Queen's University Belfast, and I suppose it was a remarkable piece of commemorative performance art by the DUP, who largely stayed outside the door of Queen's University Belfast on that conference, as they did outside of Castle Buildings in 1998. Alex Kane, you're a former Ulster Unionist Party Director of Communications. If you were to identify the main standout message of that conference from all the big hitters who attended in Queen's University Belfast over the course of the week, what would you say it is?
Well, I think the main thing that they were trying to say, and I think they said it successfully, was that they remembered what had been done. They remembered that going not just from 98, but go back a few years earlier, 94, 93, 94, coming together of organisations, individuals, paramilitary organisations, civic society, bringing them all together over a period of 4 years into the one spot where they could actually try and agree, surprise themselves and surprise the rest of the world by proving that for that one moment, Northern Ireland seemed capable of agreeing that it needed to do politics differently. And that was remembered, and some of the great figures who have now passed on were remembered as well, and some of the figures are still in play, remembered. But the one thing about all of this, which they didn't cover, which was quite surprising, is that for all of the backslapping and glad handing that was done, the reality remains that Northern Ireland is not yet a normal political society. We don't have stable government. Indeed, 25 years after one crisis after another, we still, oddly enough, look as though we're further away from depolarising ourselves than we ever were. So while the conference was important, and I think it needs to remember that work that was done, it might have been more beneficial had they focused on what comes next and how we actually, instead of saying, well done for what we did, we've got peace of some sort, we're not killing each other, which is wonderful, why they didn't ask the really important question, the most important question, why are we still not anywhere close to being a normal political electoral democracy?
Right. I think over a year ago you wrote, when Geoffrey Donaldson became DUP leader last June, there was a gentle sigh of relief in London, Dublin and Brussels. They thought it meant an end to the turmoil which had engulfed the party in January and believed he, always regarded as a reasonable, safe pair of hands, would bring much needed stability. What do you think their analysis is now?
Well, I think he has. I think he has brought stability to the party, but you did look at one moment as though the Democratic Unionist Party was going to implode, because you need to remember that party for 50 years, everything, all the angst, all the anguish, all the division, all the different opinions were all kept in-house. Nothing ever leaked, nothing ever came out, and then suddenly it all tumbled out in a spectacular way over a three-month period. Donaldson calmed that down. He brought stability to the party. And I think at this moment, the British government will be aware that for the difficulties that the DUP do seem to be presenting them, I think it's now clear that the British government and the Irish government and the EU and America, I think they accept that Geoffrey Donaldson himself and his key leadership players are all in favour of finding a way to restore devolution. And that's what they're working on right now. Had it been any other leader, I think the government would probably have given up, because there would have been nothing they could have done to bring the DUP in. I think there's a recognition now that it can be brought in.
Right. Well, before I go back to the panel on this, just one question to you, and do stay with us. The point of unity, I suppose, that Geoffrey Donaldson has established amongst all factions of the Democratic Unionist Party has been opposition to the protocol initially, and then opposition to the Windsor framework. So how is he supposed to find a path back into restoring the institutions when the glue that's holding them together has been the very principle, as he's put out, that principle, the stance that he's taken in opposition to the implementation of the protocol?
Well, I think if you go back a year ago to the May 22 election, that's what it was. The DUP, it was basically totally against the protocol, every aspect of the protocol. And Boris Johnson had led them to believe, along with other senior members of the Conservative government and his replacement, Liz Truss, that there could be some sort of renegotiation, that the protocol could be done away, that all the problems they had with it could somehow be just swept aside. That's changed now. The political debate has significantly changed within the DUP and within unionism generally, I think. They have accepted, they have fully accepted, the Windsor framework is here and here to stay. They know it's not going to be renegotiated. The Supreme Court, the United Kingdom Supreme Court, made it quite clear that the government was perfectly entitled and not breaking any law by supporting the protocol. The Windsor framework has just gone through the massive majorities in both the House of Commons and the House of Lords. What it's now come down to, the last debate was about, if you like, the protocol versus devolution. This is an entirely different debate now. This is a debate about devolution versus direct rule, and a vast majority of unionism do not want direct rule because they know that direct rule would do them absolutely no favours. So I think that's why Donaldson has keyed in on that. He, along with the Ulster Unionist Party, along with key factions in his party who wouldn't have supported him a year ago, they have now accepted that if unionism is to have a voice somewhere, is to have a platform giving it influence somewhere, that will not be in Westminster, where there's only 8 members of Parliament that had no favours done for it. That has to be in Stormont, and I think that's what's important now.
Right. Niall O'Donnell, the DUP, I suppose, have been given a number of weeks and months' space. They've had exhortations from some of the biggest players who've taken an interest in the Good Friday Agreement. What else can be done in order to allow them to save face and go back and resolve the institutions? I suppose if we're to do the spirit of the Good Friday Agreement, a lot of people have accepted hard concessions over the last quarter of a century. What other concessions, or what at least perception of concession, could be given to get the DUP back to work?
Well, I think in many ways you've nearly answered the question yourself, Colm. The DUP have been given quite a substantial amount of space and time. The British government and the European Union have now concluded the negotiation around the Windsor framework. I was at the GFA conference in Queen's on Monday and listened in particular to a very poignant contribution from Senator George Mitchell. So, yes, we have all had to compromise over the years in terms of this peace and political process. I do think that the events at Queen's were a timely reminder and a very significant one that we do need to reignite that spirit of engagement, that spirit of ensuring that the institutions, not just the Assembly and the Executive, but also the North-South Ministerial Council and the East-West dimensions, are back up and running for all of the reasons that we know, and indeed many of which we've spoke about on the programme already.
So and that question Alex Kane was asking,
just need to get back to the table as they're being advised to do.
And that question Alex Kane was asking about, where do we go from here? Is there time for a look at the Good Friday Agreement and how it operates, given the experience of two long-term suspensions of institutions in Northern Ireland and providing people with the stability to do some of the work on health, on housing, on all of those other things that people on the ground in the North need to see done?
Is that for me, Colm?
It is indeed, yeah, before I go to the others, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the institutions need to be up and functioning in the first instance. We can't then go into a prolonged period of a... And remember that the Good Friday Agreement allows for a review, and I don't think anyone would recoil from that. The institutions have evolved and developed from 1998 as is. But certainly, the key priority for the people out there, it's certainly the message that I'm picking up here in Belfast, not least when we're out canvassing for the upcoming council election next month, is that people want the politicians that they elected last May to be in Stormont, to be working the Good Friday Agreement institutions and to be delivering for them. They want Michelle O'Neill to lead the executive and to ensure that that executive is working to meet the needs of the people out there. I don't think that's too much to ask, not least in the 25th anniversary. So the DUP really are the people that are the only people at this stage, Colm, that can answer the question you're posing. Right. I just wish respectfully that they would, and that they would do so promptly.
Fergus O'Dowd, how could the Irish government help?
Well, I think they've had, first of all, I attended the conference, in Belfast as well. And I think one of the key things was the meeting between Sunak and Leo Varadkar. That's the first bilateral they had. I think they've helped by bringing together the European Union, the United Kingdom government.
But that's Americans. Everyone but the DUP. At the same time, no, Rishi Sunak was speaking in Queen's University Belfast.
Donaldson
was speaking at the same time as him. So
yeah, well, look, I just want to try and answer your question if I can. Give you my perspective on it, and I was there as well as Neil. And what I felt and what I believe is that there was a huge momentum building up there with all of the people, and there were I'd say over 1,000 people there, that they want to see change. The latest Lucid opinion poll, Lucid Talk opinion poll, says I think that 70% of the people in the north want to get the assembly up and running. You know, I've talked to moderate unionists who are there. I've talked to the Alliance, SDLP, Sinn Féin, and I think this election is
going to... Have you talked to the DUP?
Yes, I have talked to the DUP. Actually, I have, yeah.
And what have you heard back?
Well, I've met them...
In terms of private discussions, what have you heard in private discussions?
Yeah, well, what we've heard is that, obviously, there are a number of people there who, obviously, they're under the leadership of Geoffrey Donaldson.
Yeah.
But they're very clear that they wanted to work. The people I've been talking to, I don't have to say who they are.
No, absolutely not. But just give us a general vibe of what you're hearing from DUP sources.
What I'm hearing is that there's a lot of people want to get back to business, but they can't go back yet, basically because there's an election coming up.
But do they understand that they're not in business because of themselves?
Yeah. No, but they do know. They do know that. You see, the problem is...
Is it Geoffrey Donaldson? Is it the problem?
I'm not saying... Look, they can talk for themselves. You can get them on your show. Yeah. My job is to make sure that I speak to them and listen to them and listen to unionism. And if you listen to the government message and the UK message, is that they're giving them the space to make their decision.
I think that's key. And we have tried, and indeed we've invited them on
I just want
to get an insight into what they're prepared to say to you.
Yep. They talk very openly about the issues. The other point I want to make is that
that's
clearly...
Not much of an insight, in fairness.
Yeah, no, look, clearly the other point is that I wouldn't underestimate the strength of Alliance and Middle Ground moving in the context of the institutions not working.
See, Pather-Tobin.
I just think this is immensely frustrating. And I don't think people in the South know how bad things are in the North economically at the moment. Like, there's 300,000 people in poverty in the north. 1 in 7 people are on hospital waiting lists. The whole system is grinding to a halt currently because there's no administration there. Now, obviously the Good Friday Agreement was a monumental achievement. It was fantastic. But the celebrations that we've seen over the last week are akin to having a birthday party for the birthday boy who has no pulse. Because the Good Friday Agreement is not functioning at the moment. It's not working. Like, the three major elements of it, the Assembly is defunct, the Executive is AWOL, and there's no North South Ministerial Council. And, like, there's two guarantors of that agreement. That's the British government and the Irish government, and they're not guaranteeing anything at the moment. And it's really frustrating to see this. Like, you have a minority party, the DUP, which has crashed everything. And you mentioned earlier 70% of the people want to get back.
Sure, but
70% of the people don't believe the DUP should have a right to a veto.
Okay, but going back to the initial point, I think, you know, so what needs to change, in your opinion?
And it has to be reform of the Good Friday Agreement. So we're saying that you have to take away the right of one political party to crash the Assembly or to stop an executive being formed. Unless you do that, there will always be a fault in the system. The system will be prone to crashing. Now, unfortunately, Sinn Féin are not mad about that idea either. They'd like to have the veto in their back pocket to be using at times of need for themselves. But I think the vast majority of the people of the north of Ireland believe we should be moving on now. Now, I understand why there is a veto in the first place, because we had 80 years of an orange state. Nationalists wanted to make sure that you can't have that in
but
the future.
You believe it's time to change?
It's absolutely time to change.
Alex Kane, just in Europe, as a former director of communications for the Ulster Unionist Party, the DUP is now heading into an election, and I suppose the bigger strategy for unionism has to be the maintenance of the union, no matter why people would support that, whether they believe, as they did once upon a time, that the politics in the UK were more progressive than they were in the rest of the island, or whether people are committed on a tribal basis to unionism. But unionism needed to be a catch-all for all of those reasons. In the interests of that strategy, is the DUP losing its way in its current tactics as it goes to fight an election? Sure, it'll shore up a base, but in terms of broader appeal for a unity poll that might come down the tracks, it's not investing in a long-term strategy.
No, it's not investing in a long-term strategy. And I think that's true of unionism broadly. And I include my old former party in that. I think unionism has spent far too much time, not simply in the past, you know, 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement, but much longer than that, stretching back to the time when it had its own parliament. It spent far too much time navel-gazing, you know, just working out what matters to it, what its interests are, how it prioritises those interests, and didn't really care one way or the other what other people people did, because it assumed for years. If you read the history and listen to the some of the speeches that were made in the old Parliament at the time, and even in the 1970s and 80s, they had this belief that something, it would never change, that the demographics would never change, that the voting figures would never change, that they would never change. And so they never prioritised looking at the much bigger picture, which was how Northern Ireland, which was always different. It was never a fully integral part of the United Kingdom. It was always that, in Dervla Murphy thing, a place apart. It was always that sense it wasn't quite the same. And when you're not quite the same, you have to make two very clear choices. The first is to shore up your base, to shore up the Northern Ireland base, the electoral base, to reach out to people who may not be defined as natural unionists and make them as comfortable as possible, so that even if they had that aspiration of United Ireland at some point, they wouldn't be so desperate or so angry or so feelingly insular and isolated that they wouldn't put it off.
So do you agree with the sentiment that it's time for reform of the Good Friday Agreement to allow a middle ground that maybe unionist, maybe soft nationalist, and a mix of the two, but who are happy enough with maintaining a status quo Northern Ireland for the foreseeable, like the Alliance Party? Would you be in favour of seeing a reform of the Good Friday Agreement that would give them a chance to have a greater voice to represent some of that middle ground?
Oh, absolutely. One of the first pieces I wrote after the Good Friday Agreement and voting in the referendum, I wrote a piece in which I said, you know, and it's already been referenced by one of your panel there, about the review that was built in within 2 or 3, 4 years, whatever it is, of it working and running. We would look at how it was effective or could be effective, where the mistakes were. And I always wanted to make sure that rather than institutionalized sectarianism and sectarian parties and purely polarized parties, we had to make sure that if you were going to encourage new voices, new vehicles, new era politics and new parties, that right. You had to make it worth their while. We don't, it's not, even with the middle ground at the minute, you know, as somebody else said there, the veto of the two big parties, neither of them is going to relinquish that veto easily. So it's going to be very difficult. And when it's difficult for a middle ground party to emerge, it puts off voters, because then what's the point of voting for them?
We're back to the two governments again. Kevin Cunningham, lecturer in politics at Technical University Dublin and founder of the Ireland Thinks polling company, is on the line. Good evening to you, Kevin.
Can even come.
How is the DUP's stance playing out as it faces into the May elections? Is it being rewarded for its staunch principles or obduracy, depending on what your view is?
Yeah, I think that's the key point there. Not just that they're being rewarded, but all the incentives really push towards, I guess, obduracy, as you might put it. If you go all the way back to when the protocol was implemented in January 2021. Since then, the TUV have been a significant force in Northern Irish politics. And I think
this is the traditional unionist voice, Jim Allister's party.
Jim Allister's party, exactly. And I think since that point, Northern Ireland politics, particularly on the unionist side, has been shaped by the relative prominence of that party. You know, they saw off Arlene Foster, they saw off Edwin Poots, and it certainly forced Geoffrey Donaldson to take a much harder line. I think the other thing that's quite important about the TUV is that while they got 8% at the most recent assembly elections, they didn't return any seats. And I think as a result of that, the DUP have been able to kind of shore up some of their votes. And since then, they're the party, if there's one party set to gain, if there was an assembly election, obviously, it is the DUP. So I think from that perspective, you know, they're certainly in a good position. But
to what extent would it still put them behind Sinn Féin in terms of being First Minister versus Deputy First Minister? Not that that's supposed to matter in the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, indeed, not that it's supposed to matter, but no, you're absolutely right. They would be up, say, 4% in the most recent polls, from 21% to 25%, but that does still put them behind Sinn Féin. You know, Sinn Féin is still up to 31%, and the Alliance Party will be up 1% as well, whereas those kind of three parties are gaining principally at the expense of the TUV, as I said, because of the DUP's resurgence, but also the SDLP and, of course, the UUP as well. But it's worth highlighting that, you know, the Windsor framework itself is significantly more popular than the protocol, which perhaps gives Geoffrey Donaldson a little bit more scope
popular,
you know,
in the general population or amongst unionists, just according to the poll?
Well,
or both?
Okay, so both. But I mean, obviously, you've asked a very important question. You know, in In the latest Lucid Talk poll in March, 67% of the overall population of Northern Ireland were in favour, 27% opposed. But amongst unionists, a majority were opposed, but it was 50-38. So obviously, it just depends on to what extent, obviously for the DUP, if they're just fighting for that kind of... I think the key thing here is, if the TUV are no longer a force in Northern Ireland politics, it allows the DUP to move towards the centre. But if they do remain a force, then the DUP will have to continue to shore up that kind of flank to its more hardline unionist stance position.
All right.
I think that's really the key thing there for
Okay. Niall O'Donnell, your party, according to those numbers just outlined by Kevin Cunningham there, is not doing too badly out of the DUP stance, it would appear.
Well, I think we're not doing too badly out of our own stance and the kind of leadership that we're offering people in the first instance, Colm. I don't know. I just want to go back to an earlier point quickly, if I can. I don't know if I either misheard or misunderstood Alex's earlier point about the debate around constitutional change, but I don't think it's a fair reflection of that debate to say it's steeped in anger or in isolationism. Actually, quite the contrary. It's actually rooted in quite positivity and forward future looking and ultimately, I suppose that's the ultimate resolution to the outstanding issues that we're seeing faced as a result of the DUP staying outside of the institutions. Look, we'll enter into this election column on the record that we're offering people, on the vision that we're offering to people moving forward. And you know exactly what I'm going to say, and I mightn't be the only politician to say this on the panel tonight, but ultimately the real poll that counts is the one on the 18th.
Okay, that's your first to the punch there with anything when we discuss opinion polls. But we'll give the other panelists a chance to say when we start looking at polling for the rest of the island shortly. Padraig Tobin, you're a smaller party that operates in the north as well. I mean, purely on the numbers, this is a frustration for a party like your own that has, I suppose, what you might call a more nuanced position. You're looking for what would be traditional Republican voters, but also in terms of certain social issues, you would actually have more in common with the DUP than you would with your erstwhile party, Sinn Féin. So it's a kind of, if the smaller parties are being squeezed, you're included in that.
Well, first of all, we'd have a lot of the same views as a lot of nationalists and Republicans. And I would say hundreds of thousands of people would actually think Aintu, and what we're trying to convince them now is to vote Aintu as well. In many ways, there's been a kind of dissonance between people voting for parties who actually don't support their values. I think the premise of your question earlier was right. The DUP are a case study in self-harm. The DUP turbo boosted Sinn Féin's vote in the last dormant election by refusing to play by the rules. We had, 70 years of Orange ascendancy, and the minute that the demographics are changing, the DUP said, we will not accept a Sinn Féin First Minister, which had the effect then of actually pushing many nationalists to vote for Sinn Féin, even if they didn't want to. Our growth is coming from both Sinn Féin.
Well, what are your numbers like in the polls? Not that it matters. The most important poll is an election.
The Lucid poll put us at 2% in the north, which puts us around 4% in the nationalist community, which is a considerable gain in 4 years of existence. So we're happy with that. We have 19 candidates who will be contesting the local elections on May 18th, and we are significantly confident that we will be taking seats across the six counties in that local election. And we'll be focusing on our ambition to reform Stormont and, reform to make sure that nobody can crash it again, but also to reform that we can actually devolve power back from London to Belfast. And also, one of our reforms means that MLAs shouldn't get paid if they won't do their job.
Right.
It is no other profession in the world would not do the job for a year and expect to get paid.